Hello, and welcome to The Nexus, a Finnish education podcast. I'm your host, Crystal Green. The Nexus is a global conversation about education in Finland and beyond. Today we'll be talking with author and producer William Doyle. William is currently a Fulbright scholar at the University of Eastern Finland in Joensuu. His Fulbright grant project is about the future of global education and media. William, welcome to The Nexus.
Hi, it's great to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. So I'm interested, you are here as a Fulbright scholar. Fulbright is a U.S.-based grant program that sends people all over the world. But why Finland? What drew you to come to Finland? And what do you hope to gain through this experience?
Four years ago, I helped a great civil rights hero by the name of James Meredith write his memoir. It's a book called A Mission from God, and it is written by James Meredith with William Doyle. I helped him put it together. He is 81 years old. He lives in Mississippi, and he was Martin Luther King Jr.'s number one hero in a list of heroes that he prepared in his letter from a Birmingham jail. So James Meredith in the civil rights pantheon is about as high as you can get, and I was honored to become his partner on this book, A Mission from God. At the end of the book, we asked the best experts we could find around the United States on the subject of education what we should do to help America's public schools. Very hot topic of endless interest to American parents and taxpayers and so forth. And one expert, Howard Gardner, the great professor at Harvard University, said something that totally shocked me. I'd never thought about it before, never heard of it before. He said, if you want to know how to do that, look at Finland, which has the, quote, the most effective schools and does nearly the opposite of everything we're doing here in the United States, unquote. That's almost his exact words. And I thought, Finland, what on earth are you talking about? And I grew up in northern Michigan in my childhood summers in a largely Finnish-American small rural community. And it actually looks a lot like Finland now that I'm here. And that phrase intrigued me. And he also suggested I read a book called Finnish Lessons by Pasi Sahlberg. I got to meet Pasi. He recommended that if I, and I just, my fascination grew and grew every day. Pasi suggested I try for a Fulbright. I did. I am now here as a Finnish public school father of a seven-year-old boy in the system. And I am really thrilled to be inside the university experience here on the faculty at the University of Eastern Finland, lecturing on education and media. And as a father, I'm going to a parents' meeting tonight where I won't understand a darn thing that's being said, but I'm sure they'll be very nice and do some spot translation. But, I expected it to be kind of an education utopia, and it is. It's got some terrific challenges coming down the road, but the insights that Finland has discovered almost by accident, almost by osmosis, almost without thinking every day about it, I think are startling, and I think they have global relevance, some of them.
Yeah, what a fantastic opportunity and an interesting pathway that you took to get here. So you mentioned that you are a writer, and your most recent books include Secrets of the World's Healthiest Children, An Exploration of Japanese Healthy Longevity, and PT-109, JFK's Moment of Destiny. You're currently writing a book that's tentatively entitled The Schools of Tomorrow, Global Visions for the Future of Education. I'm curious, what is the narrative of Finnish education internationally, and especially that you have heard in the United States, and how does that narrative jive with your first impressions here?
Right. Great question. Finland was, for 8 or 9 years, the global education superstar among educators and among people who follow this closely. I think that a lot of parents around the world don't understand it much. Teachers around the world do. And the narrative seems to be that Finland was number one or two or maybe three in most of the so-called PISA, P-I-S-A, Program for International Student Assessment Tests from roughly 2000, 2001, I believe it was, to about 2012, when they fell to number one or two in Europe, where the, you know, some of the Asian countries or Asian municipalities overtook Finland. Now, Finland is old news for some so-called education reformers in the United States who like to put down Finland by saying, well, it's Finland. It's totally exceptional. It's a quirk. It's an outlier. They've got, you know, they read a lot. It's a socialist, so-called socialist society or a welfare state. No lessons for the United States. Let's instead look at Singapore or South Korea, where, you know, I don't understand exactly how they're more culturally relevant or less to the United States. My point is that there are global best practices in education that can be adapted or at least can help inspire nations around the world. And I think it's a very lazy thing to say, well, it's Finland. Don't worry, you know, don't pay attention to Finland. It's totally different. Well, it is different. And there's a lot you cannot export or adapt. You know, you've got a culture here that is very homogenous. That's changing. You've got a culture that is built on a radical amount of trust and cultural cooperation. That's not easy to export. You had 5% child poverty instead of, what do we have in the United States, 25 or 30, depending on how you measure it. But the things they've discovered here, the foundations of education, childhood education, are astonishingly interesting to me. You know, three quick ideas. Finland, and I've been talking to as many teachers, parents, children, and educators as I can find. There are three things that absolutely astonish me as a non-educator, just as a writer, as a dad. Who tries to keep up on these things and read all, you know, the latest books that come out, the books about grit, the books about, you know, how to raise your child this way or that way. And I try to keep abreast. And nobody told me the following realities. Number one, physical activity is an engine of learning. And Finland has learned this. The idea of giving children four recesses a day on top of a regular recess, the idea of having them every single hour of every school day at the 45-minute mark, get up and run around outside in the playground and then come back when the hour comes, is a radically different idea that I don't think any other nation on earth does as well. I know that I think Sweden does something like this. Most of Northern Europe, I don't think, does. In the United States, we have destroyed, eliminated, systematically obliterated recess and physical activity from many, many, many schools. But here it's understood that that's an engine of learning for young children. Secondly, the idea of play being an engine of a foundation of learning up to the age of seven is astonishing. It is based on good research. It certainly pays off here. And, you know, every good education researcher will tell you that learning through play is critical to the early years. We are destroying that in the United States, in the schools that ever had it. Now that's a, you know, shout from the rooftops kind of insight that Finland, you know, Finnish people tend to be pretty modest and self-critical in some ways, and, you know, they're not shouting it from the rooftop. But when you get here and you see it in action, it's inspiring. It is absolutely inspiring. And it's harder to do effectively, but they do it wonderfully here. I've seen it in action, and I think the world, people in Northern Europe, the UK, Asia, everyone can learn from the idea of play being a foundation here. And then finally, nature. Nature is an engine of learning. I have learned that in 6 weeks as a Finnish father. My son had physical activity the other day. I asked him, what did you do in gym class? And he said, we went orienteering. And I said,
That's very popular.
What on earth is orienteering? Would you mind telling me? And he said, well, they gave us some maps. They stuck us in the woods. Myself and three other guys.
Your way out.
Yeah. And, you know, it was loosely supervised and kept safe by a teacher in an orange smock, you know, a couple hundred yards away. But they had string on trees and they figured out how to get out of the woods and how to turn it into a fun race. I mean, now you cannot turn many American schools or British schools or Australian schools into, Australia is a different story, actually, or Asian schools into, you know, forest utopia learning environments as you have here everywhere. But you can try to give children nature and physical activity and play, and you can understand that it's not a distraction, it's not a waste of time. It is, in fact, a system efficiency and a critical requirement for children's learning. I don't think any politician in the United States understands that. They've never even been presented with the evidence or the stories or the learning on this. And it's the parents who I think need to tell politicians what we need in our schools. And in the United States, of course, right now, there is chaos over testing, which does not happen here. My son complains he has more tests in Finland than he did in the United States. What he means is the teacher checks in and measures what he's learned more. The system is not inflicting low-quality bubble standardized tests on a national audience every 2 weeks or, you know, five times a year. That's different. Testing is, you know, it's a sloppy word. It means different things. But what's happening here is the teacher is in charge, autonomous, respected, and they're getting much more quality information from my son and the other children than bad data coming from bad tests, as seems to be causing chaos and paralysis in the American school system.
Yes, I'd like to go off of this, what you're talking about, what's going on in the U.S. system. Jürgen Schreier, who's a German comparative educational theorist, has an externalization theory. And it's the idea that when the domestic debate that's in the media about education policy uses examples from other educational systems. So, for example, when Germany or the U.S. reference Finland in the domestic debate, the purpose of referencing those outside systems is to add legitimacy and weight to some domestic reform that is controversial. And I think Florian Waldo has spoken really eloquently about this, saying that in some sense, when you're looking at what the newspapers publish about or what the media says about, for example, Finnish education, really you're getting more of an insight into what's going on domestically than what is going on in Finland. So what do you see as the key pieces that the U.S. media has kind of picked up on about Finnish education? And what do you think that that says about the current domestic education policy issues in the United States?
You can look at Finland and you can create an argument for the systematic destruction of American public education, or you can create an argument for progressive schools or Steiner schools or charter schools or anything you want to do. So I totally agree with that theory. I think that you can look at fragments of Finland or any other country and support anything you want to. I went to one of the most popular, one of the most controversial charter school entrepreneurs or leaders, whatever you call them, in New York City once. And I asked her, and she'll go nameless, but I asked, she had a new book out. And she was talking a lot about Finland. And I thought, wait a minute, she seems to be doing the opposite of what I've heard Finland does a lot. And after the book talk, I went up to her and I said, I'm just curious, what do you know about Finland? Have you been there? Good book you'd recommend? And she said, no, but I hear they're more rigorous. Rigorous, that's the word. Okay, so to her, rigor means, you know, no excuses, eyes tracking the teacher, behavior control, don't move in the hallway if you're 6 years old, go to school from 8 o'clock in the morning to 5 at night and have 5 hours of homework, and we'll expel you if you can't do this. Okay, well then you'll get a certain group of kids and they may test well, and you know, I don't know what those numbers mean. It's not what I want for my son, I know that. So, and I've heard, you know, Diane Ravitch, who I have a tremendous amount of respect for, cite Finland frequently in ways that I agree with her. And the person who seems to have the best handle on global education insights and what the world cannot learn from Finland and what it might be able to adapt if it tests it first is Professor Pasi Sahlberg, currently at Harvard, because he's very clear on what he thinks that the world can not learn from Finland and what it might be able to. To me, it all comes down to what I'm trying to figure out here is how much of these amazing achievements that Finland has achieved in equity for many, many children. Is it perfect? No. Do some parents in Helsinki school shop to get a so-called better school? Absolutely. But relative to other countries, Finland has achieved tremendous equity, tremendous system efficiency and quality. I would argue, by not wasting enormous sums of money on irrelevant items like standardized testing and hijacking the time to prepare for that. But my question, what I have not figured out yet, is how many of these are national idiosyncrasies and how much is global education best practices, bare minimum things that parents should demand of their politicians and schools that we should be delivering to every child. I told a principal of a school in Harlem, what's allegedly one of the so-called worst schools in Harlem, which means, you know, they're the poorest, the worst resourced, and the most underperforming on standardized test schools in Harlem. They're not the worst school in Harlem. They're a school with a lot of trouble for those reasons. I asked her, what about all these things Finland is giving the younger children? And she said, my children need that more than anything. They need music. They need play. They need time in the play yard to blow off stress, to you know, recalibrate and have a cognitive reset to their mind, to feel creative, to feel cherished. Now, in Finland, many children complain they don't like school. I've heard that over and over. That seems to be a global complaint among all children. And you know, professor told me, well, that's because we're very critical, and that, you know, runs down to our children. And maybe, though, that's a crisis that all the world needs to address. Make school less boring. Make it less exciting. And I don't just mean with educational games and screens. I mean, go deeper than that. Go much deeper than that. And there's also a crisis of young boys not reading here in Finland. They've given up on reading, largely. That's happening in many, many developed countries. That's a global crisis, and I think we all need to get together and address things like that. Yeah.
So going back a little to the book that you're writing now, The Schools of Tomorrow, you said the global visions for the future of education. What is your hope for the schools of tomorrow?
We don't know much about the future. So I'm very skeptical of many of the technology approaches that have been suggested for schools. I mean, a tablet for every child or a laptop for every child so far has not pushed the needle much. In fact, there was a report by the OECD last week that rather stunningly found that children who use computers most in classroom environments tend to do much more poorly than children who use them so-called in a moderate pace. Now, I don't know how you define the hours of the day here, but the point of the report, what I took away from this, wasn't that the problem was training the teachers in technology, although that is an issue. The problem wasn't incorrect hardware or software. It was a deeper question, which is, how do you motivate children in a way that is meaningful to their learning, that improves their well-being, that improves their health, that improves their happiness, that improves their willingness to go to school every day? And I think that's a much deeper question that technology can only answer part of, that adults need to answer among themselves. And frankly, we should get the children's input. You know, there was a professor here at the University of Eastern Finland told me something that absolutely blew me away. She said her expertise is assessments. Assessments are the hot button in global education today. You know, how much, too many, and so forth. She said, forget pen and paper data-based assessments. They'll never work. They'll always pollute the system. They'll always give you the wrong or a very narrow slice of insight. And she said, she had a whole list of things that we could do instead. You know, portfolio and growth measured of the child rather than against the group. One thing she said was children should rate, or children should assess each other. And I thought, children assess each other? What are you talking about? And she said that there are ways of doing this in a guided, respectful, positive way where children will listen a lot more to other children in terms of their social skills, their group behavior, their cooperativeness, the way they manage information, all of the things which are true 21st century skills, not just keyboarding, you know, and searching information properly on the internet, but the interpersonal things. You could get children to discuss each other's strengths, of course, you start with the strengths, and guide them towards some positive suggestions that children would respect 100 times more than they would if it was coming from the parents or the teachers. And I thought, I think there might be ways of doing that, and that may be a great way to measure some of what we value in education. So I hope that answers that begins to answer your question. But I'm coming through Finland with a huge amount of questions, and all I can tell you is what I know works here that I think might work in the rest of the world, and it should be tested first. And it's not easy to test this. You need to do it over several years, and you need to make decisions as a culture first as to what your objectives are. My objective for my son is not to perform well on a standardized test. He's either going to go to Harvard or an Ivy League university, or he won't go to university, or he'll go somewhere that is good for him. But the objective is not to score well on a standardized test. For me, the objective is for him to make full use of his talents, to be a good person, to work in a society, on teams, to be curious, and all those great things that we think are meaningful other than standardized test scores. But I do know that play through the young years is learning through play, guided play, imaginative play, free play, where children organize themselves, are ways, among many others, to achieve what I think we want as a society. There's a vision I have every morning of my life. Right outside my window here, I can see through the trees. I can see a huge playground. I mean, this fits. I think it's 200 plus kids every morning, and they're out there in the morning when it's raining, playing soccer before class, before school, with 8:38 in the morning, which is a shock for any American parent. Like, what are you doing in the rain? And the point of view here is, well, that's the point.
There's no bad weather, only bad clothing.
Right. What better time to enjoy life and to, fall down and skin your knee and to do the things that children should do. But there's this symphony that happens every day right outside my window. At 45 minutes past every school hour of every single school day, it fills with children instantly. And I'll tell you something, it's the anti-Lord of the Flies. You remember Lord of the Flies? Where, you leave children alone on an island and they become demons and murderers. Well, in Finland, I've seen, what you see is huge. These groups form, and one group is throwing pine cones at the other, and you're having a gentle pine cone fight in one corner of the little forest part of the playground. Another group is playing soccer. Another group is climbing a little hill they have. Another group is playing more soccer or basketball or goofing around, jumping around, or knocking each other down on the grass. Now, and then a whistle blows at right before the top of the hour, and then bang, they drop the balls and they all just melt quickly right back into the school. And this happens, I think it's four times a day or maybe more, on top of gym, on top of recess. Now, all the research shows that physical activity, when you intervene and test it, as I think we should be doing in the United States a lot more creatively, I think it has the potential to improve attendance, happiness, health, test scores, if you care a lot about test scores. But authentic learning is what I'm after, and I think you're not going to get that from test scores. You're going to get it from assessments by great teachers, which is what they have here. Here, the teachers have courage. They have the courage and freedom based on the fact that they have master's degrees in classroom practice and research. They have the freedom to suggest creative solutions to kids who have problems, which is many, many children, in the course of a academic year. So they're able to get together, come up with solutions. That has been stripped from most American public school teachers systematically, where they are now reduced to reading from scripts, fearing punishment. I tell Finnish educators that American public school teachers' pay, performance, and evaluations are being tied to their students' performance on standardized tests in, as young as, 8, 9, 10 years old. I should take pictures of their faces every time this happens, because I see, like, they're in a horror movie. They've seen something evil or shocking. They just can't believe it. This happens to me over and over, because Finnish educators are not focused on America or the world. They're focused on, delivering education to their kids. They don't have time to follow these controversies that are raging across not only the United States, but UK, elsewhere in the world. Australia is starting to happen. And they cannot believe that children aren't given a lot of outdoor, you know, recharging all through the day. They cannot believe that teachers are being evaluated and punished or rewarded or fired on the basis of bad data from standardized test scores that go up and down every year. They cannot believe that. And I hate to bum them out when I talk about this, but, you know, the bottom line for me is that Finland is an inspiration for the world, both in the things it has achieved in terms of equity and quality, and in the things it hasn't achieved, in the problems it has, and the way it's addressing them. Finland has a common core. Finland has something close to a common core. It's called the National Curriculum, developed in 2014, and coming in next year in 2016. There's a section on play there that's moving. And, you know, it's a short national set of objectives. It's not the straitjacket misimplementation of the Common Core in the United States, which is causing total chaos for children and for parents and for teachers. It is a vision of what education could be and should be here in Finland based on play in the early years and on delivering excellence and equity through the higher years. And I think anybody interested in education should search for it, the 2016 curriculum. And I think that that's one of many ways Finland can help inspire countries to develop their own national objectives and strategies for getting there in their own education systems, not by importing Finnish techniques, although I'm sure some you can rather directly, but by adapting these insights that are universal probably to all children, in regardless of the culture, to give children a better well-being and health and education in the things that we value.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, William, for your insights, and we wish you all the best on your Fulbright scholarship. I really hope that this is a fruitful time for your research, and very much looking forward to your book, William Doyle. When do you think it's going to be coming out?
Well, my book on John Kennedy comes out next week. My book on Secrets of the World's Healthiest Children, which is about Japanese healthy longevity, comes out in 2 days, actually. And the Schools of Tomorrow, I hope, will be in 2017.
Okay, wonderful. All right, thank you so much again, William, and best of luck with your Fulbright scholarship.
Thank you so much. It's been great talking to you.
You have been listening to The Nexus, a Finnish education podcast. The Nexus is a production of EduCluster Finland. I'm your host, Crystal Green. Thanks for listening.